I'm recording the beginning of this right before I upload the video, which is already edited. But I wanted to say a thing here at the beginning, which is that this thing that I'm about to talk about exists inside of the context of the NIH's announcement that they're no longer going to be investing any money in mRNA vaccine technology, regardless of what diseases that might treat, whether it's respiratory infections or cancer or autoimmune disease or heart disease. The mRNA technology is extremely powerful, and it turns out it can do way more stuff than just vaccines for respiratory infections. And they're canceling all of it. From what I can see, because they are alarmists, and either they believe their alarmism, or they have pushed the alarmism so hard, they have sold this fear so hard that they need to take some kind of action, or they will be perceived as inauthentic. So the rest of this video is about like a minor moment in the press conference about this that is baffling to me. But for clarity, it's not about like a new program that the NIH is initiating. This is about existing research that the NIH has been doing for quite a long time for a vaccine platform technology that the NIH has a patent to, which is great. But the way RFK Jr. was talking about it is totally baffling to me. And that's what this video is about. So we're going to talk about it. Okay. I continue to need to update where my mind is at with regard to these people who are now in charge of the country. RFK Jr. just announced that NIH is working on a universal vaccine platform, or really, I wouldn't call it a universal vaccine platform. He called it a universal vaccine, which it definitely is not. This research has been ongoing for a while. It's good research. I think it's a good idea. So to get into this, there was a press conference, and let's just watch the press conference together. And I will be surprised by what the press conference contains in a few different ways. Let's go. Here's what RFK Jr. had to say.
Right now, we're developing a universal vaccine at NIH.
A universal vaccine. This is not a term that is currently used. Now, you could have a universal blank vaccine. So there could be a universal flu vaccine. That is a big target of the future. It would be really amazing so that you didn't have to take a new flu shot every year, because the flu evolves. It especially evolves its surface proteins. It can cross-link between a bunch of different flu strains, and there's sort of influenza A and influenza B that are two different flu strains that are both doing this, but they are both influenza viruses, which are very different from other kinds of viruses. And I think that we will eventually have a universal vaccine for flu so that you don't have to take a flu vaccine every year. And this would be amazing. Now, I will say pharmaceutical companies don't necessarily want that because they like being able to sell a different flu vaccine every year. But that's why we have the NIH, so that they can fund research and understand vaccine platforms and even own vaccine platforms, because otherwise the market's going to be failing us because the companies that develop these things don't actually want to develop a thing that will make them less money. That's a real problem. It is the beginning sentence in a lot of conspiracy theories, but it's a real problem. It's a real market failure. And that's why we have government agencies that are working on things like a universal flu vaccine,
which is a vaccine that addresses the entire phylum of viruses.
It is definitely not a vaccine that addresses the entire phylum of viruses. So this is a thing about RFK Jr. that he says science words to make himself sound sciencey. Like, he has to throw in a science word that you've heard in science class. And in this case, the word makes no sense. I don't need to get too into this, but there's the classification, like kingdom, phylum, order, that stuff that you learned in elementary school. And viruses are not inside of that because they are not alive, according to that system. Now, are they alive? We could have an argument. But according to that system, they aren't alive. They aren't inside of any of the kingdoms of life. But there actually is a separate taxonomy of viruses that is really weird, because viruses, it turns out, aren't even related to each other oftentimes. They come out of life separately at separate moments. I mean, that's a whole video on its own. But in short, viruses are not just different from each other. They're often not related to each other at all. But how we classify viruses, there are different kingdoms of viruses. And then within those kingdoms, there are different phyla of viruses. There is not a phylum of all viruses. And importantly, no one thinks that you can create a vaccine that will protect against all viruses, because they are all so distinct from each other in their action. These are very different guys. There are some viruses that are gigantic. They are not related to each other. Viruses are just a way that disease can occur. A self-perpetuating system that takes advantage of biological systems can happen. Quick break here, because I need to let you know about something. This video is brought to you by my underpants, and also by charity, because my underpants are for charity, which, and so can yours be. I've had the privilege of wearing these underwear for quite a while now, and you might be saying, Hank, why would I need to subscribe to underwear? Well, first of all, if you subscribe now, you get your first pair for $12. Second, it's extremely easy to cancel. So as soon as you have enough underwear, you just cancel. We make it very easy. The goal of Good.Store and Associated Properties is to make great things, make it easy for our customers, and donate all the profit to charity. What charity? Well, the money from the Awesome Undies Club, that's going to go to Partners in Health to help build a maternal hospital in Sierra Leone and help fund its operation and staffing and the training training of the people who work there, because it's going to be a teaching hospital, which means that there will be more healthcare workers in West Africa. Also, very cool, these underwear are made in collaboration with MeUndies. They know what they're doing. They have hundreds of thousands of positive reviews. There's a link in the description that will automatically apply the early bird code. You do not have to pay for shipping. We ship everywhere in the world, and it is very easy to cancel. You're going to have to buy underwear. You might as well buy extremely soft, stretchy, good-feeling underwear. If you're worried about the sizing, I've actually found that multiple sizes work for me, so both large and extra large work for me. If you're worried about waistband folding forward, which is a thing that I deal with, you might want to go a size higher than you normally would, because they're so stretchy. And also, each pair is designed by a different independent artist and can also match your socks if you're subscribed to the Awesome Socks Club. All right, so that's a good thing in the world. Now we go back to my confusion about some of the less good things in the world.
And it is effective against any kind of mutation, so it doesn't drive the virus to mutate.
It is effective against any kinds of mutations? No. But it is a vaccine platform that would not be as susceptible to mutation. And would it still drive mutations? Would it still drive evolution of the viruses? Of course it would. But it would do it less, because this system, which we will again get into, is harder for the virus to mutate in a way that would escape this vaccine's control.
And it could be effective. We believe it's going to be effective against not only coronaviruses, but also flu.
This is a wild thing to say. In fact, they know that it's likely to be effective against flu, and then it could then be entirely repurposed to be effective against coronaviruses broadly, which would be great. We could potentially have a universal, maybe not coronavirus vaccine, but maybe a universal COVID vaccine.
And it's going to be a much safer and much more effective vaccine.
Will it be much safer and much more effective? No, because you can't be that much safer and more effective. Like, look, hundreds of millions of people got COVID vaccines. If there was a huge society-wide, like, spike in cancer, spike in heart disease, spike in death in a certain group of people, we would have seen it by now. If there is any effect there, it's so small that we can't see it, which is basically the same thing as there being no effect. So here is what RFK Jr. is talking about. He's talking about a whole virus vaccine platform. And I am in favor of whole virus vaccine platforms. I think that they offer advantages over other vaccine platforms. But first, I have to tell you what a vaccine platform is, which is just a way of making a vaccine. So one vaccine platform is to breed a bunch of viruses in a circumstance that makes them less pathogenic to humans, but still alive. This is called a live attenuated virus. I think there are actually different live attenuated virus platforms. This is a way of creating a thing that you can inject in someone, and it will spur an immune response to a future pathogen. We currently have a very powerful vaccine platform in mRNA vaccines, which are really fast to create, so you can make them very quickly. Now, they're somewhat unstable on the shelf. You have to keep them very cold, which is fine in the US, but can be difficult and problematic in other places. But you can make mRNA vaccines very quickly. They're great in a pandemic scenario. And basically, the mRNA is a piece of genetic code that then goes into your cell grabs onto it, and then it manufactures the protein that that code codes for. And then that protein is then in your body, and it is a tiny piece of the virus, and it is a surface protein that the virus has, and that allows your immune system to say, this protein doesn't belong here, it looks weird, and then it creates an immune response to that. Now, there are a couple of problems with doing it this way, and he mentioned one of them in this clip. One of them is that you are just protecting against one surface protein, and so then that surface protein can just change. Now, there are ways of having an mRNA vaccine that has more than one protein that it codes for. So it can have several different bits of mRNA, which would be great, because then you could say, like, okay, there's this surface protein circulating, and this one, but we'll have a vaccine that has all of those mRNA, but it's still just looking at, like, surface proteins. A whole virus vaccine is great because it's the whole virus. And in this case, this is a new kind of whole virus inactivated virus. So it is not a live virus, but it is the whole virus. Basically, what they do, they grow a whole bunch of live virus, which is a problem with this vaccine platform, because it means you have to grow a whole bunch of live virus, which you don't have to do with mRNA. That requires biosafety protocols. It has the potential for escape, so you don't want to do it with very dangerous viruses. Like smallpox, for example, you would never want to do this with. But for something like a not very dangerous strain of influenza, absolutely fine to do this. You grow a bunch of it and then you spike it with a chemical that basically destroys its genome inside of it. But then you cool it down. Those viruses are still totally intact, but their genomes are broken. And then you put this whole but dead virus into a person. And then that person's body has an immune response to this, like, big load of dead viruses that we carefully calibrate so that it's not too big or too small of a response. And there is a good part and bad part to this. One is that there's a bunch of different antigens that your immune system can can respond to. So there's all the surface proteins, and then potentially after the virus breaks down, there's all the internal proteins of the virus. That's going to create an immune response that it will be way harder for a virus to evolve out of. And it also means for something like flu, influenza has all these different surface proteins that it swaps out in order to avoid our immune systems. It means that our immune systems are getting exposed to way more of the influenza proteins, and this has been shown in laboratory studies of animals. It means that if you give this vaccine to an animal, it will protect them against many different future strains of flu. Now, not all at the moment. So there's sort of like two big categories of influenza. There's A and B, but we're focusing, I think, on A right now because it's the one that has the greater chance of bird flu coming and getting us. If this was the flu vaccine, it might obviate the next pandemic. Like, this is good stuff. Would this protect against COVID? Not at all. So the phylum thing makes me think that RFK Jr. misunderstands what's going on here. He says that it's a vaccine that could protect against the whole phylum of viruses. This is definitely not true, but it could be a platform that allows us to, within viral phyla, create new vaccines that protect against that entire phylum. So you could theoretically imagine a situation where you have a vaccine that can protect against all coronaviruses, and more likely than that, all SARS-CoV-2 viruses. Now, that research has not happened at all, and it would not at all be the same universal influenza vaccine. It would be a separate universal SARS-CoV-2 vaccine. Kennedy here seems to be saying something that he misunderstood. Someone told him something and he misunderstood it. What they told him was this vaccine platform could allow us to create vaccines that protect against entire phyla. So it could be a vaccine that protects against all coronaviruses or all SARS-CoV-2, or it could protect against all influenza. Now, one is not going to protect against both of those. And he heard that as, oh, we could create one vaccine that fixes all viruses. It's a weird thing for a person who theoretically has been thinking about vaccines for a long time to think is possible. And this is like what's updating my model of who RFK Jr. is, which it never quite makes sense. Like, I've been trying to understand him as a communicator about science for a long time. Obviously not about science, but people perceive him that way. But there's also a drawback to this large antigen load of a whole virus vaccine, which is that you have a bigger immune response. It means that it's harder for the virus to mutate out of the vaccine's control, which makes it so that this could be a universal vaccine for flu. But also you are exposed to way more viral proteins, which is going to increase the antigenic load, so the number of proteins that your immune system is responding to, and that's going to increase the chances of some side effects. Now, as we know, pretty much every medical intervention has some side effects. It's affecting your body, and so it's going to mean something. With early tests of this on humans, very small sample sizes, we've seen no side effects that are worrying. There was like one person who got a very high fever after their first exposure to this whole virus vaccine, and then a bunch of people had like injection site pain and stuff like that. Now, this is like a pet theory of mine. There's a huge advantage to these whole virus vaccines that I think is way underappreciated by public health people, or was at least in the past, maybe not so much anymore. And it is that these dead whole viruses have an easier time crossing mucous membranes than mRNA lipid nanoparticles. So these little fatty particles that contain the mRNA inside of them, they have a hard time getting through a mucous membrane. And that means that mRNA vaccines are not good as snortables. So like Afrin, you like sniff it into your nose. So far, we haven't found a way that we can do that with them. It is much easier to have them be injections. Now, this vaccine platform can also work as an injection, but it also seems like it could be better as a nasal spray. We spray it into your nose. These whole viruses have all the mechanisms for crossing, obviously, because they're usually infect through mucous membranes. And then that does two things for you. One is a science thing, and one is a behavioral thing, and I think the behavioral thing is bigger than people give it credit for. So the first science thing is that it actually induces an immune response in specifically the areas, like the physical areas of the body, where infection occurs. So instead of just giving your body a chance to get a jump start on fighting the vaccine once it's in you, which could often be the case with these mRNA vaccines, with nasal sprays, you're actually getting an immune response in the area where the infection occurs. Whereas with injections, off this sort of full body immunity means that you aren't so much stopping the infection. You might stop the infection, but you you might also get the infection and then fight it off much faster than you otherwise would. And that's what we often see with influenza, for example. Like, people still get influenza, but the hospitalization rates go way down. This has been the case with COVID, but that means that these people are still getting sick and thus they can still transmit the virus. There is some, I think, good thinking and evidence that nasal sprays could prevent infection in the first place, or like really trap it in the very early stages, which would not just mean the person doesn't get sick at all. It would mean that they would never be a carrier and never be a transmitter of the virus. So that's a big deal. And that works better with whole viruses than mRNA nanoparticles. But I think as important, or possibly more important, and I know nobody agrees with me, especially people who are more vaccine hesitant, but I think that we as humans have a visceral, subconscious, strong response to want to be afraid of things that enter our bodies artificially. I think that it makes like evolutionary biology sense that we don't like the idea of injections. I am free of that after many years of having ulcerative colitis and then cancer. I have had so many injections that I feel like it is totally normal to do. But I think a lot of people feel this way, and I think that it's part of the fear of needles. It's not that the pain is going to be inflicted on you. It is this idea of something artificially entering your body. And I think that a nasal spray would have much higher uptake and also fewer conspiracy theories around it, because people, their subconsciouses aren't searching for reasons that this fear exists. We don't just have fears, we have fears and then we explain those fears. And so if we don't have the fear, then we won't have the instinct to try and explain the fear, which I think will increase uptake and decrease conspiratorial thinking around it. So I'm really in favor of inhalable vaccines. I think that they could be a huge innovation. So far, mRNA doesn't look like a good candidate for that, whereas whole virus vaccines do. Now, there are things about this that make it worse, and I've touched on a few of them already. So mRNA, you don't have to have the virus exist to make the vaccine. So you don't have to have like a biosafety situation. You don't have to like breed up a bunch of viruses. In the situation where you're doing these whole virus vaccines, you have to have a whole facility dedicated to breeding viruses, because every vaccine is going to contain a bunch of the viruses that you bred and then inactivated. And that's a problem both because it takes way more time. So if there's a new virus, you have to scale up a whole new situation for breeding that virus, and different viruses breed in different situations, have different things that they prefer. It takes a lot of time to develop all those protocols. So it's way slower. So I'm very much in favor of like an mRNA for rapid response, whole virus for long term. Can we create a universal vaccine against this thing so we can stop having boosters all the time? Second, that higher antigenic load might protect against mutation, also increases the potential for side effects, means you have to fine tune to a broad population the amount of virus you're putting in people to make sure that you get the immune response without getting too much inflammation and myalgia and all the other negative consequences that you can get. Not like long term myalgia, but like that feeling you get, that fevery feeling, even if you don't have a fever, that you get with a vaccine called myalgia. That's potentially more of a thing when you have more antigens inside of the vaccine than if you just have the one of a mRNA vaccine. The manufacturing of mRNA vaccines is much faster, much more scalable, and it is easy with mRNA to swap out the target antigen. So if there is an evolution of the spike protein, then you swap it out with another spike protein that reflects the one that's in the wild right now. But of course, you could be in a situation where there's many different variations of spike proteins, and it's hard for the mRNA vaccine to keep up. My big takeaway here is like giving a bunch of money to inactivated whole virus vaccines does not make taking money away from mRNA vaccines good. We should be investing in both of these things because they do different things and they do them better. mRNA vaccine technology is so powerful. It is going to be a revolution in health. It already is a revolution in medicine. The fact that we have politicized this technology to this extent is extremely bad for America. This isn't just a technology that's like good for protecting you against respiratory viruses. It's obviously been good at that, but it's also a technology that can be used for like everything from blood pressure to rare diseases you've never heard of. Honestly, I should. I probably will make a video on how cool mRNA technology is. I do think that in like the specific cases where people are sick, like if somebody has cancer, they're going to take their mRNA cancer vaccines. They're not going to be like, oh, I heard mRNA and so I'm scared. No, they have cancer. They're already very scared. They're going to take the vaccines 99% of the time. Some of them will lose to this fear, but most we will not. But then when it comes to mRNA treatments that are for like more widespread things, like potentially high cholesterol or heart disease, which is a thing that we're looking into, I think a lot of people will opt out of those and a lot of people will die because of it. Regardless, that will be a cool video when I make it, but that's not this video. Both of these vaccine platforms are very powerful and exciting and should be being invested in big ways. And this money from the NIH for whole virus vaccines vaccine platform is, I don't think revolutionary. Like, I think it would have happened under any HHS department. But very interestingly, it might be worth looking at the fact that the MAHA Action Twitter account deleted this tweet. This is a Twitter account for MAHA Action, which was co-founded by Del Bigtree, who's RFK Jr.'s former communications director. Now, it could be that they deleted the tweet because RFK Jr. just got stuff wrong in it, and that's kind of embarrassing, like saying the entire phylum of viruses is something that makes no sense. It's just a misunderstanding of the taxonomy of viruses. But even bigger than that, calling this a universal vaccine implies that it would be, and it also didn't just imply, it seemed to be that he believed that this would be a vaccine that could be used, like one shot that could be used for all viruses. And that's also silly and wrong and embarrassing to have thought that. That might be the reason why they deleted it, but it also might be because they got a ton of backlash from the anti-vaccine community. So people saying this is a red flag, people saying, oh, we thought they were gonna arrest Fauci, but RFK is becoming Fauci. People pointing out that this whole virus vaccine work was funded by the Gates Foundation. So that's a conspiracy theory that it's touching on, and maybe this money won't end up going out because who is this person responsible to? Is RFK Jr. responsible to like the 80% of Americans who think that vaccines are you know, do more good than harm? Or is he responsible to his audience, who are the 20% who think that vaccines are invariably bad? And he himself has had a hard time in the past saying that there are any safe and effective vaccines, including the polio vaccine.
There's no vaccine that is, you know, safe and effective.
Like, not leaving aside the ones that prevent us today from getting the diseases that we don't get anymore, but no, including those. And the other thing is, like, my continued update of my mental model of RFK Jr. Because there are times when I feel like this guy is just going to say anything that it takes to say that vaccines are bad. But in this situation, he's saying, no, this is a safe and effective vaccine platform. And that's coming out of his own mouth, so he believes this. But in the same breath as he's saying that they're going to, like, work on this safe and effective vaccine platform, or universal vaccine, he's also, like, portraying a ton of ignorance of biology. So, like, I don't know, maybe I should expect that. This is just a guy who, like, whose job is to argue effectively with people who are in favor of vaccines. But he has such a limited understanding of biology. I guess I shouldn't be too surprised by that. But it is updating my model to be like, what RFK Jr. does is he is like a person who doesn't understand science's version of a person who understands science. Just like Donald Trump is kind of like a person who doesn't have money's version of a person who has money. He like wants to say words like universal vaccine. He wants to say words like phylum. He wants to say sciencey sounding words. The part where he said that, like, not just for COVID, but also for flu, when this vaccine has only ever been tested against flu. Thus, I think, in part, doing a thing that we see Donald Trump doing, where he takes what he's supposed to say, and then he just, like, lumps together the things he wants lumped together. RFK Jr. wants COVID and flu lumped together so that it reinforces the idea that COVID was just like the flu, and that we all overreacted to this, and that it wasn't that big of a deal, even though millions of people in this country died. I mean, look at these excess death charts. Like, that's a lot of excess death, you guys. That's just a thought that I have, that's why he lumped COVID and flu together into this, even though it's mistakes of the level that you couldn't make if you understood how viruses work. So that updates my mental model to be like, okay, we are dealing with a man who doesn't know how viruses work, which wasn't a given. I mean, some of you are going to be saying, like, yeah, duh, Hank, but no, I don't think so. Like, I think he might just be a guy who's scared of vaccines. Like, I think that's what we're dealing with. That's a different mental model for me. He's a guy who's scared of vaccines, who really wants both the attention and the glory of protecting people against something dangerous, and also the good feelings. But also we see, you know, we don't see this so much with Trump now, but we saw it in the first term where he'd have conversations with experts, and then he'd come out being like, oh, okay, so, like, this is a thing. And then he'd get the feedback from his community that, like, no, you can't listen to these experts. So what I'm a little bit worried about is, like, his 20% of Americans will push back against Robert Kennedy here, and then this money actually will not materialize, and this vaccine platform will not be invested in, which it was going to be invested in anyway. I just want to be clear about that. This isn't like RFK Jr. making like a big thing that otherwise wouldn't have happened. This research has been ongoing. NIH owns the patent to this technology already, which is great because it means that it doesn't have to be controlled by and, like, sat on by pharmaceutical companies who might not want this to come out, who might want to like slow roll the speed at which this technology emerges, because every year that they get to do another flu vaccine, they don't have a universal flu vaccine. There's a bunch of revenue that comes with that. So I guess, like, in conclusion, one, RFK Jr. is really weird, and he's a hard guy to have a mental model of. For me, I don't know. Maybe some people are better at this, but for me, it's hard. Two, this is a new vaccine platform that is legitimately interesting, allows for a nasal route, could potentially be a universal flu vaccine, could potentially be a universal SARS-CoV-2 vaccine, which would be great. We're not sure about either of those things, but it could be. It has advantages over mRNA technology, and mRNA technology has advantages over it. And so a mix of having both of these tools in our toolkit would be very good. That's basically the whole thing. And then finally, it is remarkable the extent to which Kennedy does not understand how this works. His level of ignorance is really is surprising to me. And I know people are going to tell me that that's crazy, Hank, but this is a man who is making it his life's mission to have intelligent debates that he wins against people who are doctors. I am surprised by that. That's the video. It was extremely long. I really meant for it to be much shorter than this.